Anne, so can you tell us how it is that you became involved in issues around climate change?
Sure. Well, I can try to. I can't actually remember when and how I became really passionate about this issue. I think it was just a gradual realisation that, you know, this is the big threat. It is what, like, the Pope calls it, the social and moral crisis of our time, that it really is threatening the future of the planet. So I'm just always harking back to my early involvement in peace psychology at the time of the nuclear threat.
Yeah.
And there are just so many parallels between that time and this time.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess as with the threat of nuclear war, it was the thought of what's being done to the future for the next generation, as well as what's happening to this beautiful, fragile planet that we live on, that is, you know, the driving motivation and fear and anxiety and determination underlying my involvement in the area. I guess as a developmental psych, you know, I'm approaching it from a research perspective as well as from a person perspective.
Mm-hmm.
As at the time of the nuclear threat, how is this, you know, evidence that we're on this path towards, if not an unlivable planet, a certainly very much diminished planet, how is that impacting on kids and their way of thinking about their future?
Mm-hmm.
Let alone, you know, it's, how they're feeling about it is one thing, and what their lives are actually going to be like is another thing.
Mm.
And both of those are real concerns. You know, I feel really distressed when I think about kids of the future not being able to experience nature in the way that we do, to go out into the forest and see the birds and the mammals and the flowers and everything else, because things have been just so radically changed.
Mm, the Great Barrier Reef.
The Great Barrier Reef, yes. Fancy not being able to take your kids to going snorkelling on the Great Barrier Reef. How tragic is that? So that's it then. And then I guess I just was aware that the experience we'd had at the time of the nuclear threat was really relevant to how we deal with climate change as well. We have the same thing about, you know, the vast majority of people accept that climate change is happening and that it's caused by human activity, but very few people are doing much more than a little bit of recycling to do their bit to address it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite clear that it's going to take massive, massive person power to persuade our politicians that they've got to take radical change, that this really is an emergency that we're in, and we have to have emergency level response to it if we're going to halt, you know, the worst effects. Climate change is happening already, and there are already pretty significant negative effects from it, but nothing like what's going to happen if we cross the tipping points that we're getting very close to now. So to me, it feels urgent. It feels like psychology has a huge contribution it can make on so many different aspects of it, in terms of denial of the threat, avoidance of the threat, becoming active of the threat, looking after yourself. And your feelings of anger and fear, looking after the next generation in terms of how they deal with it, as well as trying to build the recognition that there are things that we can do, that each of us can do, and that we as the community, as a country, as a globe, can do to halt the worst of it.
Mm. And you just recently had an event... You facilitated.
Oh, yes. So
can you tell us about that?
Right. So I've become quite involved in our local climate action group, Darabin Climate Action Now, which has got some amazingly dedicated, energetic, effective people, a number of whom are psychologists involved. And a number of them have become involved in a group called Climate for Change,
mm-hmm.
which is really saying that we're going to address climate change one conversation at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very nice model. It's a bit like the question about does peace begin at home or elsewhere. I think it's all of the above. But I think it is a very nice model of basically of bringing people together, inviting people. So I held one of their dinners here, which was a matter of just inviting a bunch of people who I knew were concerned about climate change but perhaps hadn't quite worked out how to become active on it and were perhaps motivated to learn more.
Mm.
So people like you, Sarah, mm-hmm. and others. And we come together and I provided a simple meal and we had a trained facilitator who is in fact a psychologist and who's very involved in another group called Psychologists for a Safe Climate. We're doing a lot of work around helping activists to stay strong and not to burn out,
mm.
not become despairing.
Mm.
Anyway, so she was our facilitator and she took us through looking first at a video, just presenting some of the facts about the catastrophe that's facing us, and then encouraging people to express their feelings about that and where they felt that...
There was a range of responses, weren't there?
There was.
Some people felt quite uplifted, actually, but then other people felt quite discouraged.
Yes, that's right. Some people feel that there's certainly that, what can I do? What can one person do? How can we possibly change this? That pessimism and defeatism was certainly there in the room,
mm.
as well as others who both valued getting more information
mm.
and valued having something that's so simple to do, hosting a dinner of your friends. It's an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and then there were people there who said that they would that's host right. their own dinners that's with right. other another group. So there's been many conversations, as you say, one that's conversation right. at a time, but
that's right. yes.
I understand there's it's been a, many, yes. many conversations.
That's right. So it's a sort of Tupperware party model
yeah.
of social change.
And that was the first conversation. I'd never been to anything like that, and that was actually the first unique opportunity and my first opportunity to sit down with other people, and it was really kind of safe in terms of listening how people's responses, honest mm. responses, people were sharing their own experience and just the new information they, mm. you know, like, for instance, I knew that it was urgent, but I didn't know that it was so urgent.
Right.
But it was valuable to actually be with other people, to have the opportunity to discuss things openly.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's really nice to hear your feedback on that, Sarah. Yes, and again, you know, it goes back to nuclear war. We, at that time, we put out little booklets on how to talk about nuclear war at the dinner table.
Oh, God.
Because, you know, that big, scary, negative ideas
yeah.
and fears, and it doesn't seem like the sort of thing you talk about in polite conversation.
No.
but we have to. So, yes, so I think it is a very nice model.
Yeah. Yeah, it's accessible in a sense for yes. something that's such a big topic.
Yes.
It's a really practical and valuable kind of bridge.
Yes.
For people to actually meet
yes.
their own sense of where they, their own responses to reflect on their own responses to yes. the issue.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And on a thoroughly different level, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, I'll be going to Utrecht for a consensus conference, which is for a new international consortium of developmental science societies. So this means the big organisations like the Society for Research in Child Development
mm-hmm.
and European Developmental Psychology and our Australasian Human Development Association, International Society for the Study of Behavioural Development, all these big basically academic organisations deciding to get together to try to increase our capacity to have a voice in advocacy and also encouraging cross-national research on some of the big issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the issues we're talking about at this consensus conference are disasters and trauma and migration and climate change and sustainable development.
Mm-hmm.
So I've written a statement for that, and a small group of us are getting together to try to come up with consensus statements for all of these different associations that then can lead on to action.
Mm-hmm. And is this the first time you're all meeting, or have you met before?
No.
So how did that come about that this is happening?
Oh, well, again, you know, it takes somebody with passion and drive. A woman called Ann Peterson had been the president of the association that I've been involved in for some time, the International Society for the Study of Behavioural Development, ISSBD.
Mm-hmm.
She's also done a lot of work in Africa and other places, trying to reduce disadvantage and all that sort of thing. And so she came up with this idea of trying to bring everybody together,
mm-hmm.
because we all, that same thing that I was talking about with our early research on the Australian Temperament Project, have a wealth of data, but it doesn't get across to the people who need to hear it.
Mm.
So how can we, by putting our voices together, come up with a more effective way of being advocates at the at our own national and international levels?
That's great.
Mm. So that's at a thoroughly different level from, you know, a
yes.
conversation at a time.
It's I know, and I'm going to bring you back to the conversation, one yeah. conversation yeah. at a time, or just at least from your own personal perspective. And I'm just wondering, because we were talking about climate change, whether or not being a grandparent has, you know, not so much informed your perspective about climate change, but perhaps brought more of a sense of urgency to your work, whether that is relevant.
Mm. Yes, I think it does. We do personalise things. Some of the time I'm thinking about kids in general and the diminished world that they might be living in, or a very disrupted world that they're potentially going to be living in. But, you know, in your head it often comes down to those who are nearest and dearest to you. I
yeah.
think about my four lovely little grandchildren and desperately not wanting them to have to confront what could be ahead of us.
Mm.
And determined to do what I can to try to prevent that happening.
Mm.
So yes, I'm that certainly is an important thing to me. On the other hand, if I wasn't a grandparent, I'm sure I'd be looking at other kids around the place and
well, you're
being concerned about their future too.
Well, that's right, and you're involved in two huge projects
right.
concerning
yes.
children. So
that's
there's
right.
lots of children
yes.
that.
That's right. Yes.
Is there anything that you wanted to add about anything, Anne? Or
no, other than to thank you, Sarah, for this initiative of doing these interviews, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what other people have to say about
Great.
These sorts of questions.
Well, thank you so much, Anne, for your generosity and sharing your experiences with all of us. And you know what's really striking is. There's so many entry levels in terms of how we can contribute to peace, and you're involved in all of those, you know, just in terms of when's this meeting taking place? That's soon.
The end of February.
Yeah.
23rd of February, I think.
Well, we all wish you the best with it and
thank
your
you
future
much.
Work. Thanks
yes,
so much.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Anne.
14 minutes, that's respectable.